Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Janice from AGLCA and a beautiful, beautiful day in Charleston, South Carolina. We have our home port crew a little bit different mix this week. Beth, our marketing coordinator, is on vacation, and Janine, our sponsor services coordinator, has joined us this morning.
Good morning.
Hi, Janine.
Hi.
I think by now most of our listeners, I hope there's some new ones out there, but most of you know that the Great Loop is the continuous waterway around the eastern half of North America, and that our association is basically designed to share adventure and information among members, current loopers, former loopers, and who we call the wannabes. Our guest host this week is Peter Tootin, Risk Programs Director at Admiral Sponsor Marina Life. Marina Life supports our organization at the highest level, Admiral Sponsor. They provide a great concierge service to boaters out there, so look them up on their webpage, and hopefully you'll join both our organization and theirs. Our website is www.greatloop.org. And Peter, what is your website?
Website is www.marinalife.com.
Okay, that's easy enough. Peter will be talking about managing risk. If anyone has any questions or comments or feels that they need a little reassurance during Peter's talk, feel free to dial in. It's a toll-free call, 877-497-1815. And just as a reminder, kind of midway during the show, we will stop for a minute and ask our question of the week. The first person to call in with a correct answer will either get a one-year new membership if they're not a member or a one-year extension on their current membership. I think we're ready to get started, Peter. Do you want to pick up with the principles of risk management?
Certainly, and thank you very much indeed, Janice. Good morning, everybody. My name is Peter Tootin. As Janice has pointed out, I'm with Marina Life up in Baltimore, sunny Baltimore, Maryland, and great pleasure for me to be addressing the Loopers Association today, a subject that is probably quite close to everyone's heart, but not high on the list of things that you'd like to watch on a Saturday evening, but very germane to what we do in our everyday lives. And this is essentially the principles of risk management. I'm going to cover three basic topics today: measuring and identifying risks, and managing those risks that we identify to a successful outcome, and monitoring how the risks that we face in our environment are changing all the time. Following on from that, I'm going to align those particular subjects into the specific environments which the loopers will encounter, as you will encounter on your journey, whether it's north, south, wherever you happen to be in the process, whether it's a one-year, five-year, 10-year, or maybe a next life project. It's quite a big endeavor, quite a big undertaking, and there's really a lot of components that that can affect you as loopers. And lastly, of course, the most important from a protection perspective is as an asset that you have as a looper, which is basically your boat. What to do when buying insurance? The situation in the marketplace that is wide open. You're heading north, heading south, and the principle of caveat emptor, which is buyer beware, for those of you with a Latin background, is so essential to making sure that in the event, and hopefully the unlikely event, that accidents occur, that you're suitably covered and you have the protection that you feel that you personally deserve and secondly have paid for. So, without further ado, I'm going to start on the first topic of measuring and identifying risks. It sounds like a very bland statement. What are our risks? Well, we have a boat. We're moving our boat north, south, across the loop, and things go wrong with our boat. Well, that's a fantastic principle, but there are, in fact, four key areas that we need to look at to identify what it is that we face potentially for an impact or a negative outcome for anything that we do. And those four key areas are people, which would be ourselves as the owners of the boat, the captains of the boat, the navigators, the equipment, which is the boat itself, the environment, which covers such things as weather, the situation that we're in, poor conditions, congestion, high-low waters, and, of course, it's external, which is the fourth. And the external aspects of risk relate to, should I have to be there at a particular place at a particular time? Those are the external factors that are impacting us. So it is basically the four principles, which is people, equipment, environment, and external. And let me start with people. The most important part of everything that we do on the water revolves around ourselves, because we are navigating the vessel, we are directing it to go to a certain place, and we're doing it based upon things that we have learned, things that we are determined to execute and conduct safely. And as far as we are concerned, we take our boat out and we sail it. That's all well and good. But there are some very key things that we need to look at. First of all, the decisions we make as boaters regarding whether or not we go to sea revolve around the circumstances that we as individuals face. And there is a very key principle known as the I'm safe principle, which we should follow. And there are very good reasons for that. The I'm safe principle is basically an acronym, which is I for illness, M for medication, S for stress, A for alcohol, F for fatigue, and E for emotion. That's I'm safe, I-M-S-A-F-E. Those using those principles, we have to take a look at ourselves before we set on the water. Any one of those key six elements in evaluating ourselves can lead us into an unsafe circumstance, whether it's an emotional issue, whether we've had a couple of beers, whether we are on medication that could affect our judgment. If we cannot self-assess the criteria in the I'm safe principles, then we should not go onto the water. We should not go out. We should leave our boat at the dock and come back another day. Very, very key to everything that we do regarding what could go wrong and how to prevent it. As far as, and that really addresses the people principle. As far as equipment is concerned, we all have different types of boats. We have different age types of boats. We have different configuration types of boats. We have a whole raft of circumstances that can determine the suitability of the boat to the navigation that we're proposing, whether the equipment is up to date, whether we're using a Garmin database that might be out of date if we're using Garmin equipment for navigation. Have we looked at our charts? Do we have current nautical charts for which to navigate? And then we go to the boat itself. You know, do we have sufficient fuel to make the proposed trip? Do we have sufficient navigation lighting on the vessel so as to avoid collisions? Is the boat itself sufficiently prepared for the voyage? Do we have enough food and water on board? Do we have enough oil lubrication from the engine? There are a number of elements that we need to make sure that we have ascertained the safety level that we require to make a particular segment of navigation, and that all comes under the heading of equipment. So we've covered people, we've covered equipment, and the third is environment. Now, the environment is inevitably going to be start with weather. Weather is one of those unique elements that in which we live that affects us every single day. I have relatives who can't get up in the morning because of a bad back, because of a certain amount of moisture in the air. That's a weather-related thing. Do we take a view that the weather looks nice today, so therefore it is nice? Absolutely not. There are sufficient resources to enable us to make very considerably detailed evaluations of whether or not our environment, principally our weather, is going to be able to allow us to safely navigate upon our passage. And there are several resources that will enable you to do that. Specifically, I like to use the NOAA site, which is www.noaa.gov. Has phenomenal weather, predictive and also actual conditions, which covers not only just the radar. The radar is the start. It is weather at the moment. We have to look at such things as ambient pressure, dew point spreads. We have to look at winds aloft in order to give us a better picture of the weather. Because one thing we do know as mariners is that the weather has this incredible propensity to change. And there is no question that if in doubt, the weather is going to change. If not in doubt, the weather is going to change. It's really a very simple thing. So to arm ourselves with information about the environment in which we're going to navigate is a key aspect. Lastly, and the fourth key principle is external factors. External factors are a little bit more esoteric, but those that inevitably are going to play a part in whether or not we should be at sea or navigating the waterways for our own protection. And those external factors can be as simple as, do I need to get my boat to a particular place because the repair yard is going to shut in 2 days for Christmas? Do I have a specific reason to get my boat to a certain place because if I don't, I won't sell it? You can create analogies that are going to give an impression upon you that is going to affect your decision-making process through external pressures. And that's external. It's not the weather. It is everything but the weather that's around you. So the four key things that we need to think about in evaluating those risks are the people, the equipment, the environment, and the external factors. The acronym, of course, doesn't come across very nicely. It actually is P, with P-E-E-E. But it's a very effective methodology for utilizing as loopers, or indeed any other form of transportation media, to be able to evaluate what it is that you need to consider in order to make the safest and the most reasoned decision to complete your journey safely. So those are the things that we need to look at to measure and identify the risks. They will come out. They will occur to you as you think through the four key principles and enact a process which enables you to actually identify things that maybe you haven't thought of. So think about it. Maybe create a checklist for yourself. I'm a checklist person. I have a checklist for everything. I know a lot of people that are very good at checklists on computers. I know a lot of people very good checklists on paper. It doesn't matter, but the checklist is the surefire way of not missing things.
I thrive on checklists, Peter.
Good. And it does. It tells a lot about how you deal with the process of your not only your lifestyle, but about measuring and managing your risk. So let's talk about now the outcomes to a risk. It's again, a pretty simple principle, our outcome. I want to arrive safely. I want to arrive safe. I want to arrive warm. I want to arrive happy. I want to be at a place that is going to give me the satisfaction that I have completed my journey and that the asset that I've used to complete it, i.e. the vessel, has not been compromised in any way. And in order to do that, we have to understand what the outcomes are. We know that we're going to use fuel. We know that we're going to, over a period of time, require engine maintenance. We know that over a period of time, our equipment is going to need to be upgraded. We know we are going to have to clean our hull. So the risks that we face that could compromise any one of those things, we have to understand what the successful outcome is. There is no point in using the P checklist unless you consider what the successful outcome is to navigating your vessel. And the successful outcome to navigating your vessel, just to give an example, is basically overhauling the engine. Now, you may have a very long stroke, very slow stroke, four-cylinder, which may go on forever. Or you may have one of those nasty German peel stickers, two strokes, that potentially, and they don't have them much in boats these days, I think they went out in the 70s in Germany, but in a couple of thousand hours, eventually you're going to put a conrod through a cylinder. Now, the successful outcome to that is to monitor your engine hours and to know that at 1,500 hours, you do need to have a cylinder replacement or ring bearings replacement into your cylinder head, because otherwise the outcome that you're going to face, whether or not you've navigated successfully, is going to be a bad one. So think about when you have basically got to where you're getting to, what is that overall condition that you need to arrive at? And lastly, the process of monitoring the changing circumstances of risk. We talked a little bit about changing weather. That, to me, is, of course, a very big issue because I happen to fly an aeroplane, and aeroplanes really don't like weather, especially bad weather. And it's no secret, of course, that whilst the weather at 5,000 feet may be bad, it could be beautiful on the ground and vice versa. The changing circumstances, however, are not confined to weather. Let me give you an example. You may be off the coast of off Mobile. There are plenty of tiger mussel shoals off Mobile, Alabama. You may not know it, but what is a tiger mussel shoal? I've never heard of it up here in Maryland. Now, that's part of your Great Loop experience, is that you're going to have a differing circumstance of the risks that you need to address as you get to different places. The weather patterns in the Gulf are substantially different from up in the Northeast. There's no question about it. We all know that. We all look at the Weather Channel. We can see it. So the question is trying to identify how the circumstances relating to your risk, whether it be infestation on your hull, whether it be weather circumstances, are going to change according to where you are in the process, where you are going. So it's very important to understand and to create for yourself a series of checks and balances that enable you to do this. And it's very, very simple. I would love to spend some time when I go down to Annapolis, spend some time at the dock. And the reason I want to spend some time at the dock is because I'm going to ask everybody every single question I can think of. Of course, it helps having an English accent because usually people will try to answer me. But the bottom line is that I'm going to learn local knowledge in Annapolis by asking boaters in Annapolis, what is it about the bay tides that are particular that I may not know about? What is it about the weather patterns that I may not know about? What is it about the timing to enter harbor relating to tidal flows that I may not know about? Ask the questions. Keep asking, keep asking, keep asking. That is the surefire way to be able to monitor any change in circumstance of risk as you go about the Great Loop process, because you are going to go to places you've never been before. That is a given. So in doing so, it is important to gather as much local knowledge that you possibly can to make your journey safe. So we covered the measuring, the managing, and the monitoring. So what does it actually mean to the environments which a looper encounters on their journeys? Well, it's
Peter,
a very, very... Sorry, go ahead.
If I could, may we break at this time before we start the next topic and do our question of the week?
Absolutely. Yes, of course.
I want to tell you, I am so highly impressed. You have so much knowledge. You're making a dry subject extremely interesting. We'll get back to the specific environments in about 2 minutes. I'm going to ask our question of the week. Again, the call-in number is 877-497-1815. The question is a little tough this week. What is the speed limit on the Chambly Canal? If anyone wants to take a guess and knows the answer, feel free to call in. Sorry, Peter, you can pick up now, please.
Okay, thank you, Janice, no problem. The bad news is I don't know the answer to that question either, so I'm hoping there's a looper out there that does, and congratulations to the winner, whoever that may be.
Peter?
Coming on a little bit to now, what does this
Peter?
All mean? I'm sorry.
It's Steve. Just when you're talking about gathering information and asking questions,
mm-hmm.
One of the resources that AGLCA has is a forum where people can post almost any question and get a valid answer very quickly.
Steve, I couldn't agree more. That short of putting a great big pitch in for my own company, Marina Life, who does that sort of provides that sort of information on a generalist basis, AGLCA have phenomenal resources with which to gather the sort of information that as loopers you're going to need. I would encourage you to absolutely use this resource. and to use any other resources. I've talked a little bit about going down to the dockside. I mean, that's just one way of gathering information. However you personally feel comfortable with gathering information, do it. It doesn't matter how you do it, but that you do it. And so Steve raises a very good point. There's plenty of information out there from AGLCA, and I would encourage you always to use it. And it doesn't matter under what conditions you are setting sail, whether it's the most beautiful day you've ever seen, whether you're the happiest you've ever been. There is inevitably going to be something of value in the information that you can find. So let's talk a little bit about specific environments which loopers will encounter on their journeys. It's a big place, America. I used to think, being an Englishman, that coming over the Atlantic was probably the furthest and nastiest journey I could encounter, until I realized that to get from Baltimore over to the West Coast is just as far. 2 hours on the plane takes me through green country. Another 3.5 takes me across brown country. And this is a very, very, very big place. What you will encounter is, from an environmental perspective, is that we have in America one of the greatest infrastructures known to mankind, certainly the best on Earth in terms of the largest landmass area for interconnectivity. We have the Internet. There are technically no borders, even though in certain areas, I would call this the great disunited states of America. For the purposes of looping, you can gather information from anywhere. But the circumstances that you're going to find that are changing, we've talked a little bit about weather. We have talked a little bit about tides. Let's talk a little bit about customs. Although we are clearly a united country, there are many cultures in America. And understanding or trying to gain some knowledge about the cultures which we encounter and which we address in the process of gathering information that is valuable to us regarding how we go about our great loop tour, we have to take into account the way that the information is being presented to us. And by way of explanation, there are certainly, in what I do, in the risk management arena or the insurance arena, there are 50 different states with 50 different sets of regulations. Now, from a marine perspective, there are nautical charts, there are local regulations on boating, there are local customs, there are local ways of doing things. The environment which is going to change for you is not just what's the weather going to be like. Are there going to be different tides? Do I have different marine perils, such as, you know, we talked a little bit about tiger shoal mussels? It's all about how the people that you're going to encounter can give you the information and how the regulations and the customs in the areas that you are in could differ to the extent where your understanding of a subject could be very, very different from that which is being given to you by the people that are giving it to you. I cannot emphasize more clearly, and I can say this as an ex-Englishman, encountering American culture, I spent many years here in the Upper Chesapeake Bay. It's an area I'm very comfortable with. I've become assimilated to Maryland. But frankly, if I go to deep southern Texas, I may talk the same language, barely be understood, but the culture is so different, and that the understanding of the information that I'm gathering to make my risk decisions is very comprehensively different from that which I'm used to. So despite the fact that we are in a theoretically a homogeneous society, we're really not when it comes to the process of managing risk. So going to come on very briefly to our last subject, which is probably the most practical in terms of money going in and money going out. Everything that I've talked about thus far has been, essentially speaking, theoretical. To measure, manage, and monitor risk, if you don't already, I would recommend create a checklist for yourself. Okay, what it means to your specific environment. Give thought to the answers that you're getting, the information you're getting. And at the end of the day, those risks that you are assuming, whether they be the risk of sinking, catching fire, or going aground, those risks which you are inherently have and that you residually, by the time you have checked your weather charts, checked your tide charts, those residual risks are still going to be there. That's what we do to to insure our boats. We transfer that risk to somebody else, and that somebody else is an insurance company. Now, in the preamble to this discussion, we mentioned the words caveat emptor, which is beware buyer, because we're really in an adversarial position with our insurers, and the reason for this is quite simple, is that the insurers are making money for their shareholders. They are not endeavoring to make money for you. The principle of transferring your risk from your personal balance sheet, whether it be your own individual as a person or whether you have registered your boat in a protected environment, which could be a limited liability company or a registered partnership, effectively you're protecting your interest as best you can, and so is the insurer. They're protecting their interest as best they can. So look, when you buy insurance, look at not only the insurer, but the person selling it to you, the broker. Look at this guy, because he is, again, coming from a direction of differing shareholder interests. So I hate to be the harbinger of bad news, but I will tell the loopers that one of the particular circumstances that you will find yourself in if you're heading south is that what applies in the north from an insurance perspective does not apply in the south. You may find yourself cancelled halfway down from the lakes through to Mississippi. That happened to us with one of our customers about 3 weeks ago. He gets a call on board his boat. He's got about 600 miles to run till he gets down to the Gulf. His insurance broker said, I'm terribly sorry to tell you, in his best northern drawl, which I do not have, that his insurance was herewith cancelled. Why? Because he was heading south, and it was still actually just towards the end of the hurricane season. You have to prepare for this. And to prepare for this is about looking at, again, we go back to our principles of risk management. That's a differing environment. Different things apply. Insurance is a big component of it. Not only is it a big component, but what are you buying for insurance? Are you buying a policy with a high deductible? Are you buying a policy with a low deductible? What is your tolerance for that risk? If things go wrong, you have an accident. Can you sustain $2,000? Can you sustain $5,000? And once an accident happens, what is your process for dealing with the accident? For those of us that have had auto accidents, and I hate to probably assess that may be pretty much all of us, the auto accident is painful. It may not be physically painful, but the accident itself is kind of something we don't want to happen. And it's the aftermath that gives us the most grief. Why? Because we're dealing with an adjuster, we have a broken auto, we have to get it back on the road, we have to deal with the insurance company. And so dealing with all of those issues is something we don't want to do. So let's get ourselves to a place where, one, we minimize the opportunity for the accident to happen, and two, if the accident happens, that we have sufficient protection in our coverage to enable us to be comfortable to know that our loss is going to be made whole, and three, to educate ourselves just enough to be able to prosecute a claim. Now, prosecuting a claim is never fun for anybody, but there are certain things that we can do to make that a much more effective and a much less painful experience. Now, in our practice at Marina Life, we specialize in doing such things as helping our boat and member communities to deal with the preparation as much as anything, and then the dealing with the problems when they occur. Now, if we're doing a good job, and you are doing a good job as loopers, you're providing yourselves the best opportunity not to have the accident, not that the accident happens. And the very simple, I will end with a very simple analogy as far as insurance is concerned. A very old friend of mine once mentioned to me that insurance was nothing but smoke and mirrors. And I said to him, well, in that case, explain to me why you buy insurance. And he said, well, I don't know, because once I have insurance, if anything goes wrong, I'm covered. To which I responded, in which case, I presume you have a life insurance policy. He said, why, yes, of course I have a life insurance policy. Well, working on the same premise, therefore, you would walk out across the road in front of a 10-ton truck because you have insurance. The answer is he would not. It was kind of amusing because we were in the pub at the time, but the bottom line is the principle is there, that you buy insurance as a safeguard, not as a backstop for an eventuality that you know is going to happen. So with that, I would like to basically thank you very much indeed, Janice, and everyone at AGLCA, to give me the opportunity to discuss a little bit about risk management. It's been my pleasure. I would welcome if anybody would like to ask questions or to look us up at www.marinalife.com. As Janice has mentioned, we are very trusted and grateful partners with AGLCA. Our business is paramount in making sure that our boater community have a safe passage, because a safe passage leads to an optimization of resources, an optimization of experience, and at the end of the day, we're trying to get the best out of what we have, and we're fortunate enough to be in this experience of going around the Great Loop. So thank you very much indeed, everybody, and I've enjoyed speaking with you today.
Well, Peter, thank you. This has been one of the most informative seminars I think we've had. I've just learned so much, and I appreciate your input. Again, thank you. Thank Joy from Marina Life for doing what you guys do. Look up Marina Life. They're a wonderful concierge service and many other things. Peter, thank you. Next week, we're going to give the Homeport crew a break to celebrate the holiday weekend. However you out there celebrate the holidays, have warm, wonderful times with your families, and we'll see you back on the 30th. Thank you very much.
And Janice,
bye. Thanks, Peter.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.